Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast, where we unpack the future of sales together. Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast. I'm Abby White. Today we have with us Bianca Arrigo, and I am really, really, really excited to share this conversation with you. Bianca started her career as a very high performance salesperson in the IT industry, and we unpack a little bit of her career as we go in the conversation. She then went on, after a life-changing experience, to be co-founder of HumanOS, which is a 360 health optimization platform that combines powerful technology with best-in-field human coaching to create an all-in-one employee wellness solution that works. And I really love what Bianca is doing in terms of just challenging the status quo around how, particularly as employers, we approach well-being and the wellness of our teams. So we're going to be having a conversation, particularly at the start of the year as we're kicking off, how we can build some high-performance habits, how we can make them stick, how we can support our employees, what we can be doing ourselves, and really, if we want to play a high-performance game, how do you be on your A game and actually prioritize some of your health? And Bianca's story is also something, a very personal story that she shares with us that is truly inspiring and has genuinely moved me. So I'm really looking forward to sharing this conversation with you. Sit back, grab a pad and pen, because there's plenty of notes to be taken, and enjoy. Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast. We have Bianca Arrigo. I did it. I just mispronounced Bianca's name. It was very embarrassing. So we've got really good outtakes for this episode for you to tune into. Welcome, Bianca. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
And it's early in the morning in the UK, so we're super grateful that you're joining us.
It is. It's not too bad at the moment. It's 7:30 a.m. It's
okay. Oh, that's okay. I have a hyper kid that's up from 5:30, so anything past that, it seems to be good.
Yeah, you're good. Absolutely.
So I've been so excited to have you on the podcast since we met through a mutual friend, and he was like, oh, you guys should talk. I trusted him, so shout out to Ryan, and I met you, and as soon as you started telling me your story, you started telling me about HumanOS, I just had the biggest goosebumps ever. So I kind of am going to pause there, because I want you to tell the story, because it is just so high impact and so powerful. So can you tell us a bit about your background, a bit about your story, and how HumanOS came to life?
Yeah, totally. I guess, like many people growing up, you know, I was one of those people, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I never had like this idea of like this dream job or these dream goals, and sort of just worked hard at everything I did, but didn't have this really clear vision of this is where I want to be. And always had a big interest in sort of human behavior and why we think and feel and behave the way we do. I was bullied when I was at primary school. And I think when things happen to you young in life, it sort of influences what you question and believe. And so I've always had a real fascination of human behavior, and that sort of, well, it was between that and being a volcanologist. I also loved natural disasters in a non-creepy way. And so it was between psychology and geography at university, and I went into psychology, and it was just based off that sort of obsession of human behavior. And that throughout my time at university, I actually really enjoyed this and enjoyed learning about the subject and enjoyed learning about the brain. And so decided that's what I was going to do with my life, and probably, you know, graduate, take some time out, and then come back, add to my qualifications, and go down the sort of clinical psychology route. About 2 weeks after graduating from university, we were told that my dad, who was a super healthy man, he was out on his bike doing like 50 kilometers every day, wasn't a big drinker, didn't smoke. We found out that he had 3 months left to live. And so I guess this was the first time in my life that I firsthand experienced like how unpredictable life can be and how it can just throw these curveballs at us that we have to respond to. And so the next 3 months was very much putting one foot in front of the other and trying to meander our way through this really challenging time. And then after the 3 months, and my dad was my best friend in the world, and he's a super Italian man. And after this 3 months, he told me he'd give me £500, which is a lot of money to him. He told me he'd give me £500 if I went and got the first job I applied for. And I was kind of like, wait, but you're dying. Like, this doesn't seem fair. Get a job. What? And obviously, I didn't want to go back to university after my qualifications. I didn't want to go traveling and be far away from him. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And all I knew at the time was I was really motivated by money. I either wanted to try and buy his health or buy him a Ferrari. And that was the only thing at the front of my mind. And I knew I was good at talking to people. So I applied for a sales job. It was seemed like the natural thing to do. I got this sales job, and a week later I found myself on a sales floor for an IT company. There's about 800 people on the sales floor. I was one of very, very few women. I was the second youngest in the company, I believe. And suddenly thrown into this really extreme, really intense sales environment working for the world's largest IT company. And as you know, with your background in IT sales, you know, it's a really tough, competitive, aggressive industry. And so I guess at that point, I just threw all my grief and my pain and my stress, I threw it all into my work. I was like, what can I control in my life? Well, it's my job. So I'll just try and control that to the best of my ability and just working towards this goal of trying to buy my dad health or that Ferrari. My dad ended up living for, I think, maybe 2-3 years. I can't remember exactly. It's quite a weird time to try and remember. But when he did eventually pass away, you know, I was in the top performing sales team globally. I was working at points like 20 hour days, at points 7 days a week, had these huge targets, this huge pressure. And so when he passed away, I actually found myself in hospital. And the doctor said that I had become so stressed and my cortisol levels were so high, my stomach stopped working. And because I was so strong-minded, I kept on going and going and going. And so my body physically started shutting down and I couldn't eat my food. I couldn't digest food. I couldn't sleep lying down. I was in pain from head to toe. And I was just in this high, high state of inflammation. And it was sort of this moment in my life, I guess, where the person, one of the people I loved the most in the world, had had their health taken from them and had no control over that. And I sort of just thought, well, why am I now throwing my health away because of my behaviors? And I also then had this realization, this moment of just, why are people not talking about the physical impacts that stress has on the body? Why are we talking about stress like it's this mental thing and this sort of mental impact and not actually this very physical and very, you know, actual disease, if you will, an illness? And this was pre-pandemic and before we were having all the conversations we're having now. So anyway, long story short, I quit my job. I went traveling for a year. I bought a tuk-tuk and traveled Sri Lanka and did some other quite niche things. And then I came back to the UK, added to my qualifications, started one-to-one coaching and tying this mental and physical well-being piece together before it was the done thing. And then during the pandemic, I saw this opportunity to work with corporate companies who could no longer take their employees to get drunk or for nice dinners or on fancy holidays, and actually work with them to try and truly improve employee well-being and support their employees. Started working within 6 months with companies like American Express, Snapchat, University of Cambridge. It just sort of all started growing really fast. And then that's when I had the idea of sort of HumanOS and met my now business partner. And we thought, you know, we want to build a platform that can support the service and what we're trying to do in the world.
Thank you. Like, firstly, that is such a deeply personal story. And I have goosebumps again for anyone watching on video on YouTube. I have goosebumps again on that story, seriously. And like, thank you. Because I know that's a deeply personal story. And when I heard it, it just made so much sense to me why, you know, I follow you on social and, you know, I see what you put into HumanOS. I see the work you're doing with companies and it's incredible. And then understanding the story behind it just really brings it to life. And it just spoke to me on so many levels. I was like, right, got to connect with you more. Got to get you on the podcast. Got to get you talking to our sort of audience and clients. So thank you for sharing what's, you know, a very deeply personal story. I really appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. It's a bit of a long one, so I do apologize.
No, it just gives so much context. And if I break the story sort of into two pieces, I want to first touch on the IT sales part, because, you know, a lot of our clients are IT sales. As you mentioned, my background is IT sales. And as you rightly said, it's a it's a high pressure, it's a tough game. And, you know, you were in, as you said, you know, one of the world's largest companies and one of the top performers globally, which hats off to you. That is not easy. So starting with that, what do you think it takes to be a truly, like, play at that level of one of the world's, you know, global leading performers? What do you think it takes to be a high performance salesperson at that level?
When I, like, look around at the best salespeople I know, and whether that's, you know, running your own, because effectively when you're working in these big sales companies, you're running your own micro business and a large macro business, right? And so whether it's in that environment or actually the salespeople who are running their own businesses, the top performing salespeople all tend to have very common traits in place. And I think, you know, they all tend to be very resilient. Like, a lot of the rejection and the challenges and the setbacks, it just becomes like water off a duck's back. And they have just this ability to go again and go again and go again, and this sort of like growth mindset. I think they have huge amounts of self-discipline, and, you know, they are able to motivate themselves to do things that other people just can't or won't do. They're very creative. I've always said my whole life, like, oh, when, especially when I speak to some of my friends who are super like creative and, you know, can create like art and jewelry and clothes and stuff, I go, God, I'm not creative. I don't know how you do that. Like, I can't even draw a stick man. But then actually, I think we're very, like, I really can't. But I think we're creative in other ways that you're able to like think outside the box and understand like what are your customers' needs, how do you meet them, like, and approach it in ways other people might not. And I also think now, especially maybe not so much 5-10 years ago, but more and more so, they are learning and investing in how to really like optimize their own energy. And it's less so like, you know, working every hour of every day, although of course at times there is going to be huge sacrifice and you have to be willing to sacrifice if you want to be at the top. But actually, I think the probably most successful salespeople I know are the ones who really know how to like optimize their energy and sort of hack their days and play that sort of game of speed.
I love that. And I want to talk to you about that, because I feel like, and this is why part of your story resonates as well, I feel like historically that conversation was never had in sales. And there was a certain level, like you said, you know, go back 10 years, it was a certain level of, are you the first person in the office, are you the last person there? And I think now that conversation is starting to be had more and more. And, you know, I definitely think there's a correlation around, you know, stress and sales, and there's that piece. And I remember very vividly a manager saying to me, you know, Abby, I think you'll go really far in your sales career, but my number one concern about you, and I'm waiting for him to say, like, what skill is it do I need to develop, what course that I need to do, he's like, you'll burn out. And I was like, no, don't be like, I'm solid, I'm good, I'm not gonna, it's never gonna be me. And I did, and I got chronic fatigue and I burnt out. And I think that that is something I feel, particularly at the moment where we're seeing massive, you know, globally, a lot of burnout, I think it's a conversation that needs to be had a little bit more. So what are you seeing there around, you know, tapping into that? What are high performance salespeople and high performance people doing to better optimize their energy, better optimize their well-being, so they can turn up to work and be at their best?
Yeah. And I think this is like, if we're looking at like a societal level and at the masses, this is a thing that people are still getting really, really wrong. I mean, in the UK, the average age of burnout is 32, which for me just sounds terrifyingly low. Yeah, it's, when I first read that statistic, I was like, what? Like, for me, I've always thought burnout's something that happens after decades of like getting it wrong and just, you know, really not managing your stress, not eating correctly, not sleeping well, all these things that contribute. And so when I heard it was 32, I was like, that's terrifying. I was also reading the Gallup State of Wellbeing Report 2023 recently, because I was looking at sort of, we have a lot of customers in Australia. And so I was looking at, you know, regional factors and differences. And Australia, which I was really shocked about, Australia has some of the highest stress levels in the world. And I was like, again, like, wait, what? Because like, whenever I speak to like anyone in Australia, they just seem quite happy and quite chilled. And they're like, yeah, it's stressful. And I was like, that's crazy. And it's like 47% of employees in Australia stress daily, and 67% now are identified as quietly quitting. So this whole idea of presenteeism. So you're physically in the office, but mentally you're elsewhere. And so, you know, this is something that we really, really need to tackle and look at and go, like, why are we seeing this? Like, why is burnout happening so young? Why are so many people so stressed? Like, realistically, we have more health offerings and services than we've ever had, and more access to health, like education, but yet we're the most stressed we've ever been, and we're the most ill we've ever been. So in order to sort of flip that on its head, we need to be like, well, what are we doing? And I think the people who are really starting to get this right are the people who understand, like, what is my future self going to thank me for? And actually are realistic that I cannot sustainably give this effort that I'm given now for the next 10, 20, 30, however many years. So actually, how do I maintain an optimal energy? Consistency. And it's this whole idea of thinking consistency over intensity. Lots of people think intense, I want to run a marathon, I want to lose X amount of pounds, you know, I want to climb Kilimanjaro. But no one thinks, I want to walk 10K steps every day for the rest of my life, you know, or I want to eat well and eat one nutritious meal every single day for the rest of my life, you know. And these things are actually, if we start thinking consistently, they're going to add a lot more to our health and our functioning than these big intense goals, which have a time and place, but aren't how we should be thinking on a day-to-day grounds. So I think, you know, the most successful people or the most high performing people are the ones who are either all these little building blocks that they're implementing to contribute to success consistently.
I totally agree. Do you think there's a step change to be had in some of our thinking as well of, you know, it's not the warm and fuzzies, it's not, you know, a good tick box conversation to talk about? And I think we are starting to move away from that. I think we are starting to see it. But for people who are sort of still on the fence, or like, I don't have time for that. Like, I always remember saying, my brother's a running coach, and I was saying to him that I didn't have time to work out. This is like several years ago before I really got into it. And he's like, Abby, Barack Obama works out every single day before he goes into the presidential office. Can you perceive that you have more on than Barack Obama? And I was like, well.
That's a really good argument.
I know, it's a brilliant argument. Like, but do you think that there's a, you know, for that step change for people who are still not over the line, are you seeing that?
I think it's a really, really big conversation, because I think actually there's a lot of people who fall into the category where they may not have the time or the resources. And so they're not financially in a position where they can get childcare or they can pay for the better choice of foods. And so that's always something to be considerate of. But I think actually for the majority of people, they do have the time and resources, and it's a matter of prioritizing. And unfortunately, I think as human beings, we don't take our health seriously unless two things happen. We either have our own health risk, or we either see someone very close to us lose their health. And it's that sudden realization that we're not superhumans and that our lives are not infinite. And actually we then start to prioritize it. And what we need to happen is for people to have that approach and prioritize it before something bad happens. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. And I also think as humans, we're generally quite lazy and we want the quick fix, the quick win, the magic pill. We don't want to do the truth that is health optimization of this is every day and every day for the rest of your life. And 80% of the time you have to make the decision that your future self is going to thank you for. And that is boring. And that is just what it is. And that's what you have to do. And it's not going to be fun all the time. It's not going to be bells and whistles. And, you know, it's not going to be constant endorphins, but it's what's good for you.
Yeah. And I like even the mental reframe I learned once was more around changing your language on it. So rather than saying, like, I don't have time for again, the majority of us, actually saying it's not a priority. And then you're like, we've all got the same 24 hours in the day. Are we choosing to make that 10-minute walk around the block or whatever it might be, you know, or just that one healthy meal, as you said, or whatever the one little thing might be? Are we saying I don't have time, or are we saying it's not a priority and changing some of the language? And my brother, when he was kicking my ass, he's gonna love this episode. He was getting me to do that, and as soon as I said it, I was like, oh, that hurts. I'm actually not prioritizing it, rather than I don't have time.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, and I think it is, it's a case of prioritization. And actually, a big mistake we make is trying to prioritize it all sometimes. So suddenly we go on this like, okay, I want to transform my health. I'm going to sleep for 8 hours a night. I'm going to eat healthy meals with breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I'm going to exercise 5 times a week. I'm going to take all my supplements. I'm going to do my breath work. I'm going to do my meditation, X, Y, Z. And then suddenly we become completely overwhelmed because we've just tried to set these huge goals and life-changing lifestyle changes that actually, again, is not realistic and it's not very easy to accomplish. And so actually, how can we make that barrier to entry really low? What's the minimal we can do sometimes to still go forward? Like, where do we start and actually standardizing a few habits and then optimizing them instead of just trying to like change everything and then changing nothing?
I was going to ask you about that because like at the time of recording this, we're in January, everyone's just come back from Christmas, everyone's on their New Year's resolutions. And I think last I read, I'm totally making up the stat, but I think I read something like 8% of New Year's resolutions get stuck to, and even then it's like no more than 30 days. So talk to us about that. If someone's like listening to us talking, feeling inspired, which I hope you are, like how do we start?
Yeah, I mean, correct on the stats, 8% of Americans hit their New Year's goals and 80% have failed by February.
Yeah, wow. I've definitely been that every year. In case anyone feels bad about themselves, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah. No, it's totally normal. I was actually talking about this yesterday because I was with American Express and we were doing a sales kickoff for the year for them. And I was talking about sort of goals and how do we approach these goals and how do we make sure we're in that sort of 8%. And actually, I think you can break it down into three main things. Mastering the habit of showing up, and actually a habit has to be established before it can be improved. So again, the basic skill, like do it once a week. And once that becomes a habit, then do it twice a week. And then do it 3 times a week. Don't try and bite off more than you can chew and set yourself up for failure. So this idea of standardize and then optimize is the first one. Again, coming back to the consistency over intensity. Don't set these huge, massive, intense goals. Have one or two, that's fine. But actually, what can you consistently do every day? That 1% every day. You probably have read his books as well because we're quite similar, but James Clear and Atomic Habits, and he talks about this a lot.
Addicted to his book. It's my number one book.
And it's that whole idea of, like, you know, 1%, it doesn't seem like a lot at the time, but actually over the course of a lifetime, it's the difference between who you are and who you can become. And so what can you do? What is your 1% every day that's going to help you improve? And then I think last one, and potentially one of the most important ones, is this idea of not waiting for motivation. I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is they wait for their motivation to come and then they action. And actually you have to action and then motivation follows. And it's a bit like when you're first trying to get an object in motion, and like Newton's first law, okay? So trying to get an object in motion, once that object's in motion, it will stay in motion. You get most resistance at the beginning when you're trying to get it off the ground. And we're exactly the same as humans. So we have to rely on the self-discipline and the action, and the motivation will follow. And that's how you then build the habits.
Yeah, I love that. And it's such a good time of year to start thinking about that and to get on our way. And so a lot of what you've just talked about are sort of more what we can do as individuals, but what about what corporates can do? Because again, going back to that point, I think it's really fascinating to see, you know, how many employees right now that you said are struggling with burnout, disenfranchised, you know, all the rest of it, checked out. And so I think there's responsibility for us as individuals, and I look at my responsibility of what do I do, but I also look at it and go, well, what's my responsibility to my team and what are some of the things I can do there? So what do you find, and you mentioned, you know, you've worked with American Express and so many other incredible businesses, some Australian companies. What do you feel from a corporate perspective corporates can do to support, you know, the well-being?
I think in the corporate well-being space, I say this as a company in the corporate well-being space, but it's a space in which so many companies are still getting it so wrong, both the providers and the employers, right? And I can't see how anyone thinks that we are getting this right when there is more companies out there ever supplying employee well-being. There's more investment ever from companies in this area, and yet problems are higher than ever. And I'm like, there must be something here that's going really, really wrong if this is the case and these are the numbers and these are the stats. And I think a lot of EAPs and support programs for employees, they're just not relevant. They're just not doing the job they're meant to do. They're not being engaged with. They're not actually useful for the employee. They're not making their lives any simpler, any easier, any less fearful. And so they're actually largely redundant. And so companies really have to be thinking about, what are the needs of my employees? How can I create a safe that allows them to be, feel the space that allows them to be safe, that allows them to develop personally and professionally, that makes them feel motivated, that makes them feel fulfilled? And yes, there's workplace responsibility and the employer's responsibility, and then there's personal responsibility, and it's down to the individual then to take those tools and to make the most of them. And they can't just blame the employer, but, you know, actually, there's a lot of things I think a lot of employers aren't doing. You know, flexible working. We've proven it can work. We've seen that now. We had no choice. People were given that luxury, that ability to pick and choose when they wanted to come into the office, when they didn't. And actually, for a lot of people, their productivity went up because they're not stressing about childcare. They're not stressing about having time to do the food shop. Little things that create cognitive tax and cognitive load. So looking at your sort of flexible working strategies and where can you implement some sort of leeway there. Management and leadership training is huge, especially now. I think we're in a time where managers are being asked to do more than ever. They're being asked to do the job-based skills and the job roles and getting it from both sides. But then they're also now being sent on things like mental first health training, don't get me started on that, and other such courses. And so now they're being asked to take the real emotional load as well. And a lot of managers are in management positions because they're very good at the job, but not so good at people. And others who are really empathetic and really good at people haven't ever been given the skills or the education on how do you support yourself in that role. Because if you're taking other people's problems all day, every day, that's going to have an impact on you. So, you know, actual proper training for management, for leadership, and then training for the employees as well. Like things like burnout, stress management, emotional intelligence, imposter syndrome, all these really relevant areas that we know impact huge numbers of people. Why are they not being discussed every day? Why are people not being taught how to deal with these things and learning about these things? Recognition. Building a healthy culture is absolutely key to a healthy business. And so if you're not even sending an email, which takes 10 seconds to recognize your people, what sort of messages is that giving them? And I think that's one of the really easiest and cheapest things to do is actually just creating that culture of recognition and appreciation. Diversity, inclusivity, you know, workforces that are diverse and inclusive have 30% more innovative ideas than those who do not. And again, it's something we're still getting really, really wrong. And then I just think as well, communication. And again, I think the pandemic really shone a light on this. During the pandemic, companies were having to constantly communicate to their staff, like, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. Bear with us. And employees were like, okay, you know what? Actually, they're being really transparent. They're telling us all they can tell us. Like, we're going to listen. We're going to respect that. And then as soon as the pandemic ended, it went back to, we're not sharing this information. You're just going to do this. And people don't like that, you know? So actually a lot can be improved if we just communicate more effectively with one another. And so there's tons that can be done.
And what are you seeing in terms of outcomes and results or some of the studies that have shown? Because I think that sadly, and I hate to say this, but I am going to say it, sadly, to invest in these sorts of things, there still has to be a business case behind it around how they're going to, I don't know, reduce our turnover, or increase our productivity, whatever it might be. What sort of benefits are you seeing now for companies that invest in such programs and initiatives?
Yeah, and this is what's one of the really difficult things about well-being and well-being in the workplace specifically, because it's really hard to prove that return on investment. Every corporate well-being company, including us, will have stats on how we are doing it. But it's, you know, everyone has their own way of measuring it. Everyone has their own statistics they use, and it is difficult. But I was reading recently about in Australia specifically, for every $1 invested, it was a $2.3 return on mental health initiatives. And so it's about showing the companies that, you know, like, this is how many days you are losing every year in productivity through burnout, through presenteeism, through absenteeism. Like, this is how much it's costing you. And we do this exercise with all our clients. We take a look at their workforce and how many people they have. And we say, okay, if this is how many employees you have, this is how many days on average you're losing. This is how much money it's costing you. This is the return on investment for every £1 you spend on it. And we break it down for them. And I think you're right. You know, we're still in a time where people may not take it seriously, but what people do take seriously is the bottom line. Yeah. And so when you can put it into numbers for them of, okay, that you may or may not care about your people, that's down to you, fine, but you care about your profits, and this is now heavily impacting your profits, and you care about attracting top talent, and this is only going to become more important to attracting top talent, especially as these younger generations come through. They don't care about the flashy cars and the holidays. They're like, I want flexible working. I want to start at 10 a.m. Like, this is what I want. And they're not scared of saying it. And it's getting a lot of stuff, but I quite respect them for it, to be honest.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Even one of our team was having a conversation in the office the other day, and hopefully she won't mind me saying this, but I'll say it anyway. She's 24, and she was saying, like, her group of friends were all talking about, you know, who'd been asked to go back to the office as a mandate, who wasn't getting the flexibility that they had during COVID anymore. And it's sort of, you know, it's now almost like a given that people want that as one of the, it's not even a perk, it's just that they expect it as standard.
Yeah, for sure. And that's it. And people want autonomy. And they want flexibility. And, you know, we live in it, and it's unrealistic at point for sure as well. But with, like, social media and the way the world works now, like, everyone thinks they can be a CEO overnight. Everyone thinks success happens at the click of a fingers. Everyone thinks, you know, you can work your dream life from Bali. Like, these things are not realistic, but actually there are things that can be realistic within that, and people want to choose their hours, they want to choose their days, they want to choose, you know, what time they come on, what time they log off, and they're expecting it. Like you said, it's not now a question, it's these are what I want, these are my terms.
Yeah, I agree. So I want you to talk to us a little bit about, and it's the first time in our podcast history I've ever asked this question, but I want you to talk about human OS. And the reason being, I never ask people about what, you know, they do and their product specifically or their company specifically, because everyone's like, yeah, it's a biased answer. But the reason I am going to is because I've looked into it, because I've stalked, and I love what you're doing, and I genuinely believe what you're doing. And I know that even for me, I'm a massive reader, as you and I talked about. And I get really overwhelmed by, you know, this expert says you should do this and this expert says you should do that. It's all conflicting. And I just I've been following your journey now. I love what you're doing. So I actually want you to talk a little bit more for anyone who's thinking, cool, but what does Human OS actually do?
Yeah. And so on that point, that's kind of why we exist, right? So my business partner and I come at it from a standpoint where I've been in the corporate world. I've experienced the stress, the pressure, the burnout. You know, I've gone through grief in that environment. It's had impacts on my health. I understand that inside out. Then we both were one-to-one coaches. He was a one-to-one coach for 10 years. I have over 10,000 one-to-one coaching hours. We have a huge amount of experience in the coaching field. And exactly as you said, we both were like, something that's meant to make people feel better is so overwhelming. How do I eat? How do I train? How do I sleep? And that shouldn't be the way. Health should be simple, and people need to understand it's about what finding what works for you. And we're both really passionate that everyone deserves access to a coach. Everyone should have a personal cheerleader. Everyone should have someone who helps out on their journey of, this is what the right solution is for you, and I am here to support you on that journey until you get there, until you can do it on your own. And that's where the sort of first idea of Human OS came about, is how can we simplify coaching? How can we make coaching available to everyone and bring in this whole team of in-house coaches who can work together? So our personal trainers, our nutritionists, our therapists, our osteopaths, our personal development coaches and our professional development coaches, they can all work together to ensure that the needs of the individuals are being met. But, and as we've alluded to a number of times today, that wasn't enough for me, because yes, you can give someone the best coaching in the world and all the tools to take control of their health, but if they're still walking into an environment every day that's at their detriment, that's toxic, that's bringing them down, that's making them ill, then something there has to change, because it doesn't matter how able you make them, they're still in the wrong environment. And so what we're trying to do now at Human OS is the way we approach work in today's modern world is wrong. If we were getting it right, we would not see the stress, the burnout, the illness, the anxiety, the depression, the physical illnesses where they are. And so actually, how do we change the environments and the way we work? And we do that through data, and we do that through action. So we use some really, really powerful technology with all the data we collect to then create reports for organizations on, these are your challenges. This is the industry standard. This is the optimal standard. This is how much money you're losing. This is the problems you're having. Let us help you now create a better culture, a better environment based on your own science, based on your own data, to then actually build these effective wellbeing strategies that, yes, improve the employee wellbeing, but also improve business performance, and doing so hand in hand. And that's what we're doing at Human OS.
I love it. I love it so much. I love everything that you're doing on your journey. So I have to ask you about your, you know, you mentioned earlier, which made me laugh, around, you know, everyone thinks they can be a CEO and, you know, it's super glamorous. And, you know, you and I both know how glamorous that really is. Are you find it inspiring to watch your journey around, you know, your commitment, your self-discipline to, you know, you share a lot around your exercise routine or around, you know, some of your well-being rituals. What are your non-negotiables? Like, before we started recording, you said you've got like a packed, action-packed day. What are some of your non-negotiables that you just will not, you know, let go?
Non-negotiables for me, I try and follow my life on like an 80-20 rule. And 80% of the time I'm making the decision that my future self will thank me for. And then 20% of the time I'm making a decision on what makes me feel good right now. And I always say it's like when I'm giving my talks or when I used to be my clients, I'm like, there's no point living to 120 if there are 120 miserable years. Like, it's just not fun. So I try and do the 80-20 rule. And especially as I've gone on my own sort of journey with my wellness, you know, I went from the IT job to being completely health obsessed. I was vegan. I was exercising 7 times a week. I was like trying to get 9 hours sleep a night, and it was completely like unobtainable and unrealistic. And actually it becomes a bit obsessive. And so now for me, it's very much like listening to my body. Do I need to go and be really sweaty right now? Or actually, do I need a gentle walk? And actually, you know, being really in tune with myself and making sure I find time to make sure I'm checking in with myself. And for me, and, you know, this as a business owner, especially when you're sort of at the start of that journey, it's so easy to compare yourself to others. And it's so easy to think you're not doing enough, or, you know, you're not making enough sales, or, you know, all these intrusive and negative and detrimental thoughts. And so very much one of the most powerful things I try and do is just stay in my own lane and not watch anyone else, like not even, you know, look at what they may be doing, because it's not conducive to me. And so for my own protection and my own well-being, it's very much like I'm a horse, I have my blinkers on, I'm going from A to B. Like, it doesn't matter what the outside world is doing. And then probably, well, like sleep, I'm someone who doesn't need to sleep much. I say that when I was working in the city, 3 hours a night, I'd be absolutely fine. You could not tell. I'd like go and smash my meetings. I'd be like on the phone, sending out the emails. And, you know, I've always been someone who doesn't need much sleep in the short term. And then again, coming back to books and in like research and sleep. And then I realized, oh my gosh, like this is terrifying, this science. And so now I have to have my 8 hours sleep. And that's sort of a non-negotiable to me. And obviously there's nights where that might not happen. And especially when we have children and we have sort of, you know, at the start of Human OS, I was having to go to so many events and so many networking. And so there's going to be periods of life where that's just not realistic. But really for me is trying to make sure that sleep is not compromised, and making sure you find time for your relationships, I think is a huge one. When I'm really busy with work and trying to fit my training in and trying to do everything else that makes me feel good, I can sometimes not prioritize my relationships. And I really quickly see the impact that has on my well-being. And I think, as you know, in this game, it can become very lonely very quickly. And it's really, really stressful. And you can often feel like not many other people understand that stress. And when we're that type A personality and the pressures we put on ourselves and the standards we set for ourselves, you can quickly become very alone and it feels very dark. And I think so finding time for those relationships and the people you trust and you love who make you feel good, and actually remembering there's more to life than just how many sales your business makes, which sometimes we can forget, it's really important.
So we've talked about so many different things. We've given people quite a few sort of pointers where you might want to start. But if you were to leave someone with first step, okay, before you go back to your emails, you go back to your kids, you go back to whatever, you know, take 2 seconds to yourself now to reflect on this podcast. Like, what's the first step you would encourage someone to take now?
Identify what their one priority is. Not like go, oh, I've heard all these things, like I want to do X, Y, and Z. Like, identify the one thing that resonates with you the most. Identify the one thing that, you know, would make the most difference first, and just put a plan in for that.
Love it. And then a really cool question for someone like you who reads a lot of books. Any book recommendations that anyone feeling inspired? You sort of, you know, what are the books you find yourself recommending more than others?
My favorite book of all time is probably Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, which I just love. I don't know if you've read that. It's really amazing.
I'm ordering it in about 3 seconds. If you link my credit card statement to my podcast conversations, they're pretty well correlated. I come away with all these book recommendations.
It's incredible. It's about a Holocaust survivor, but he's also a very famous psychologist, but it's not a book that's depressing. It's really quite inspiring, and the levels of resilience. And it's just, yeah, for me, it really just reminds me how resilient humans are. And I go back to it a lot. I'm currently reading for the fourth year in a row, The Daily Stoic, which I love. And that's a great one for people who just want to get started, because it's literally one page a day. And it gives like a little stoic quote and then what that means in the modern world. And that's really, really nice because it covers sort of all areas of health and it's just so easily digestible. I don't know, there's so many good ones.
And you said James Clear earlier, which I think is such a good one if you want to build new habits. Like, that's my go-to habits, whether it's well-being habits or even sales habits. I think so much what James Clear talks about also resonates in business and sales.
Yeah, his newsletter is great as well.
It's funny, I can have like 10,000 emails when I come back from holiday. I will delete a huge proportion of them, except for our lovely clients who are listening. But James Clear's newsletter, I will not delete. I just always read it.
It's so good. Yeah.
So before you go, how can people connect with you? How can they follow you? Do you have any resources that you give out? You know, where to be from here that if for anyone who is inspired to connect?
Yes, definitely. So you can connect with us on LinkedIn. We're Human OS on LinkedIn, or me, Bianca Arrigo, and I'll send you links. We've also got our website, humanos.co.uk, and you can book in for free calls with us on there if you want to discuss anything further. And then we also are on Instagram, humanos, or again, Bianca Arrigo Coaching, but I can send you all the links.
Amazing. We will put the links in our show notes. So if you want to connect with Bianca or Human OS, all the links will be in the show notes. Thank you so much. I am so happy that we managed to do this. And thank you for sharing your story and sharing so many sort of recommendations and pearls of wisdoms with our audience. So thank you so much, Bianca.
No, thank you for having me, Abby. I've had so much fun.
We will tell Ryan he made a good connection and a good intro.
Yeah, I want to start the morning every morning like this. It's so nice, just chatting away, having some coffee, sharing ideas.
Thanks, Bianca.
Take care. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Bianca as much as we did. If you want to connect with Bianca or check out Human OS, look at our show notes and you'll see all the links to connect there. Now, before you leave us, please don't forget to subscribe to our channel so that you never miss a podcast episode that comes out. And finally, in the show notes, you will also find a link to RevUp, our community that brings together revenue-generating teams to learn from an epic lineup of experts. You may not know this, but there is a free layer of our community that you can be a part of. So check out the link and join us today.